This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. If you're a fan of MPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me...
Jackie Sayers.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Jackie, we talked a bit about your past life and we got to the stage you described doing a degree in history and a degree in social work at Massey University. And then you started working, I believe.
I did. I worked for the Department of Social Welfare, it was as it was called, in Palmerston North in 1980.
Okay.
But when I graduated, it took me about a year to get a job.
Yeah. So you were looking for work as a social worker?
Yes. Yeah. But I had a hard job getting a job because the degree was new. It was set up by Merv Hancock.
Oh, before Ian Shirley's time then?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. And I was in a joint... I was in a joint year. I did what the first and second year together. So I was.
Oh, you had some credits, you mean? So you could combine.
Yes, that's right. And so New Zealand wasn't used to graduate social workers.
Yeah. So was it a 4-year degree then, or a 3-year?
Four.
And you had some practical sessions in.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I did some. Practical work with the Department of Social Welfare.
Yeah.
I did one in Palmerston on what we call casework, and I did one in Fielding when I worked in helping setting up a youth centre here in Fielding.
Okay.
That was two placements, and the other one was a one at the hospital in the rehab unit, and the other one was a community-based one setting up a youth garden. At back on the property at the back of what's the Catholic Cathedral, and near where Teachers College Park used to be.
Okay.
And that was in conjunction with the City Council. Yeah, so four practical.
But there weren't many job openings, or was it all these new graduates were all looking for work?
I don't know the reason, but I applied all over the place. Some people didn't even bother to reply back.
Yeah.
But in the end, I got... the offer of three jobs. I think they all came in the same week.
Yeah. What made you choose social work then?
Because when I decided that I didn't want to go back to nursing, which is my original qualification, I wanted to be a teacher. And I can't remember if I already mentioned I did apply for teacher training, but I got turned down. Because I was told I was too old and I had too many children.
Ah, so what sort of age were you then?
36.
Okay, yeah.
So that put a kibosh on that. So I thought, well, I might become a history teacher, but they weren't interested in history teachers.
Yeah.
Not in the 70s.
Well, they're just starting.
Well, you couldn't. New Zealand history wasn't even a major at Massey in the 70s. And they weren't interested in history. And I didn't have any other useful subject like maths or something. And I thought, I'm going to get a career of some sort.
Yeah.
So I had never heard about social work, didn't know anything about it. And I think I went to talk to the director of social welfare. And the name of the director at the time escapes me at the moment, and to talk about what it was. As simple as that.
Okay.
So I'd done a placement.
Yeah.
There. So, I fell into it.
Yeah. And did you have any particular preferences to the type of social work you wanted to do?
Well, not to start with, but I did, as I progressed, I'm more a community worker than... I like working with groups and you know, the community itself,
okay,
rather than individual casework.
Yeah. So, and you were one of the first of the wave of social workers with a degree qualification?
With an undergraduate degree. Yeah. I think there might have been a course in Christchurch at a different level, and I think there might have been one at Auckland. But there was, I think this was the first basic... Okay. You know, undergraduate course, I think.
So did that mean there was much of a change in the nature of social work? Older social workers had a different range of experience or the change in the responsibilities?
Certainly it altered things, I think, yes.
Yeah. I know I had some experience in planning, and the early, and we were in, it was doing sort of long-term planning, so there was someone with a geography PhD, a sociologist, a demographer, and qualified planners as well. But previous to that, people who've been working in planning have been doing mainly just the regulatory control planning permission for building houses and so on. So it was a much... wider definition of the role, and presumably in social work they were thinking the same sort of thing.
I assume so, but I think at the beginning one's job really is sort of very well learning things at university and having some practical experience. But it's like when you go to university, the first thing you have to do is learn what it is that the university wants.
You learn
the system. So I think it takes a while to learn the system, you know, what was the Department of Social Welfare, what was it doing, you know, those sorts of things. It takes a while.
You mean the social work department?
Was it
called social welfare there?
Or, it was, it's changed the name so many times that it's much easier for me to call it the Department of Social Welfare.
Okay, yeah, yeah. It's not the ministry, it's the university department.
It all changes over time.
Absolutely.
I'm sure the degree they teach now is probably quite different to they taught all those years ago.
Yes, well, I know, just in sociology, going back 50 years, it was all about class and hierarchies, and now it's gender and ethnicity. So,
yeah.
Was there much ethnicity material in your social work course?
Not using that word, but certainly Māori studies were important. Which I did with my BSW and sociology.
Okay.
With my BA, I did in the history degree. I did some sociology and also I did 5 papers in the Māori department as well.
And that was just developing then as well, was it? Because Mason Giori.
Yes, Hugh Carfrew had taken over. He was head of anthropology, and around about the 70s. Because he told me the ball for picking up Māori studies was being thrown around, so it went into the anthropology department at Massey. And I was very fortunate actually to be study with him and a range of other Api Mahuika, Pakata Whai, John Kamarira were all lecturers there at Massey.
Was Mason Giori then at that?
No.
No,
I think Mason was I don't know whether he was in. I think Mason was somewhere else at that time.
Later.
This is long.
Yeah, because he got very strong in the end, didn't it? It became very strong, Mary Stokes.
Oh yes, yes. Well, it just started off under social anthropology.
Okay. And so, were there many Maori students as well?
No, but there were in the Maori classes.
Yes.
And that had some interesting spin-offs because there were Māori and Pākehā learning Māori together in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a visual learner, not an oral learner. Mm-hmm. And I'm a book person. Mm-hmm. And a number of the Māori students didn't speak Māori, but they could pronounce it.
Yeah.
And we used to meet in the cafe, which we used to be sort of underground there somewhere, in the student centre, and we did try because it was all book learning. It was still textbook learning for the language. So we used to try and practice, and that didn't work very well. So we actually formed a Māori club, which has got a history of its own, and I've just deposited or have recently deposited some of the early meetings and photographs of that at the archives at Massey University.
Oh, okay.
And we formed a Māori club called... It was... The name of it was the name that the stream had before it got its proper name, and I can't remember which is the correct one, Turitea or Tiritea.
Oh.
I think Turitea is the proper name. The stream...
Turitea stream. That's what I've known it as. Yes. I don't know which is the...
The original Māori club was called Tiritea because the stream used to be called that, I think.
Okay.
It wrongly, it was...
Yes, okay.
Something like that. And so, yeah, that started off the beginning of that then.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then when you went into actual social work...
That was useful. What I learnt in history, and because my BA degree, I wanted to study anything about this new country that I'd come to live in.
Mm-hmm.
So I studied Pacific history and a bit of Russian history in the Pacific...
Russian history in the Pacific.
Well, because it was the nearest I could get to New Zealand.
So, what is the Russian history in the Pacific?
Well, they were just busy around this area. I can't remember now.
Around New Zealand, there were Russian.
Well, in the Pacific.
Was that whaling or?
I can't remember now. It's a long time ago. But what I'm saying is, it was difficult to actually study about the country.
Yes,
about New Zealand itself. So I was looking for papers that would help me learn about New Zealand, hence the Māori studies and racial studies between Australia and New Zealand with race relations.
Oh, comparative study, yeah.
Comparative studies and anthropology.
Thinking. Now, in your day then, when I came here in 1978... And there were some prize-winning history essays being circulated, and I read some of them were saying New Zealand has no race problem because we treated the Maori so well, and these were prize-winning essays. So you would have come after that?
No, before.
Before that phase?
Yeah, yes. I'm talking 1973,
73, 74, 75. So was that the impression that you were given as well then?
Well, yes. The history. One of the history lectures I did told was said the that the treaty was null and void.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yes. No. That wasn't touched on.
Yeah. Okay.
No, it wasn't touched on. And what was interesting though, is that because I was doing Māori studies at the same time I was doing history.
Mm.
We were looking at the treaty in both areas.
Yeah.
And so I was studying the Māori, the version of the treaty in the Māori language.
Hmm.
Not a good knowledge, but, you know, with the Māori translation. And also at the same time studying in English. And I realised in 1970s that they were absolutely different.
Yes.
They're not the same.
Yeah.
And that was a light bulb moment.
Yes,
So there were some interesting things that I learned from there, But so that basis of looking at the life in the Pacific, islands and race relations, comparative race relations, was really very useful for the basis of understanding social work.
Yeah, okay. Mm. So you started working as a social worker, and you would have been working with older, very experienced social workers in New Zealand, or was it a relatively new area as well, as an occupation?
Oh gosh, the history of social work. It'd been growing for quite some time, and I think they were called different things at different times. I'm not an expert on... You know, the progression. We've got people in U3A that I could point out to you that could tell you all that.
Okay.
It was certainly a well-established.
Yeah.
Because there'd been a welfare act, you know, I think 1925.
Yeah.
There'd been a welfare act, but there'd been welfare stuff way before that.
Yeah.
And it'd been developing.
And that was it mainly through central government or through local?
I would say that was central government. I don't think there was the voluntary. There were always voluntary agencies,
yeah,
but not to the extent that there are now.
Okay.
But no, it would be mainly government, and it was. We had about 21 or 22 categories of people that we could deal with, from, you know, child physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, and then, you know, right the way through to practically anybody.
Yeah, okay.
So there was about 21 or 22, and when we had a case, it usually had a number on it of what it was, was about.
So what sort of, I mean, obviously you're implementing policy of some kind. What was it, allocating funds? Was it sending people to various supervised residential accommodation, or what sort of? What options did you have with the case?
Well, most of it, I suppose, rolled around a lot of it around teenagers and kids getting into trouble, stealing cars.
Oh, sort of probation officers, sort of thing.
Well, there was a children's court, if I remember rightly, we had in those days. We went to kids would get charges or whatever they were called, and they'd have to go to the youth court or children's court. I can't quite remember. Yeah. Okay. This has changed over time.
Yeah.
And also the question of children being in foster care and this is the time of the institutions of Hokio and Kohiteri and all the ones that you may be reading about now.
Oh, well, they're talking about the things that happened there.
That's what they're talking about now. But they were an Epuni, and they were all over the place.
Yeah.
Kids were being put into institutions.
Hmm. Mm. So what was the feeling about it? It was felt this was good for them at the time?
Well, the authorities might have thought it was good, and the police might have thought it was good, but I didn't.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't agree with it.
Was it very stressful work?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and why was that?
Well, because when you're a social worker, you're often damned if you do or damned if you don't.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you take the child away or do you keep it with the family? Which is the best way. It's not an easy decision.
And that's still an issue, yeah.
It's still an issue.
Now, Jackie, you've just given me a publication here. It's Highbury Farnow, The Early Years, Collected Stories, and it says by Jackie Sayers.
Could you tell me?
Yep.
Yes. I wrote it because I'd been involved in my social work days and in the early 80s with a group of children who were... belonged to the Highbury Hoods, which was a kind of a gang.
Yeah.
And there was lots of newspaper articles and horror around about these kids. But I was one of several people who were concerned that, there were other ways of dealing than sending them off to institutions.
Yeah.
So through some other members from the Department of Social Welfare, Community Work and the Health Service and the Police Youth Aid got together with some of the parents, and we brought the parents together and to try and help them learn, help them find ways themselves of helping their own kids. And that basically, and we called it the Highbury Tarkerov Westbrook Support Group.
Mm-hmm.
And we had our first meeting on the Pai Pai of the Morai Church at St Michael's, with permission from the pastor at the time, which was Hapai Winiata, if I remember rightly, and the Matua Whangai community workers. And we used to have regular meetings helping them learn about what education was available, what was the law regarding children, helping them understand.
Yeah.
And it finally developed that the group of parents decided that they needed a space for the children, for kind of a youth centre.
Yeah.
So they put in a submission to the city council for a Quinn garage. Mm. I think it was costing about $16,000 or something. Was
yeah.
And as a result of all that, we eventually ended up with the building that's now part of the library, which was the first Highbury Whānau Centre, which was actually built by apprentices at the UCOL.
Oh, yeah.
And the city council got involved. It was quite a big community thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just came many, many years later that we never told our story.
Yeah.
So I was challenged to write it, so
yeah.
I did.
Okay. Yeah. So
I did some research. I interviewed a number of the parents involved in the setting up of the Highbury Whānau Group, and also the workers, the city council, the police, health workers, social workers, community workers, and I just put their story together.
Okay, so these are all the accounts of the different...
Yes, from their perspective of why they got involved. There's questions there. And just an analysis of what was happening at the time.
So this is describing the events in what, the...
80s.
And published in 2006, and it's in the City Library.
It's in the City Library, yes, and they just recently asked me for some more copies, so we just had some more copies.
Oh, okay. Printed. Good. Highbury Whānau of the early years,
yeah.
Like Jackie says.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I left the Department of Social Welfare in 1985, and I went to the hospital where I worked as a student unit supervisor, which was a combination job paid by the hospital board but responsible to Massey University. So I was an associate lecturer at the university. Social workers would come to student units. There were four or five. There was one at probation, one at social welfare, and two at the hospital.
Okay.
There was one at Koitere, and there was another, I think it was 16 of them all over the country. And so there were full-time supervising social workers who would supervise students in training.
Okay, yeah. Mm. So these were sort of placements the students had for...
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
And mine was in community health.
Okay.
So I worked a lot with the Highbury Whānau and with other voluntary groups and helping them with what they were doing, but the reciprocation was have a placement for a student.
Yeah.
And that's how they learned some of their tasks.
Oh, okay. So you were based at the hospital, but the students were out in the community.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I supervised them and constructed the placements, etc.
Okay. Now you use the term community health.
Yes.
So, and that's part of the whole public health.
Yes, it was. It was because the view of health is much broader than than getting the flu.
Yes. So a social worker working in community health, what would their objectives or responsibilities be? How would they function?
It depends. Some of the students would help maybe a group. I'm just trying to think now. It's a long time ago.
Is it education or vaccination?
Yes, well, I had students working in civil defence, asthma support groups, and sorts of things.
So were there many people working in that field? Was it a large area, or you were one of a small number with a massive workload?
Well, it was expanding for the students. The community, the social work spans really from working from the community with groups as opposed to maybe working one-to-one. I mean, social work covers a whole range of ways of working with people. Yeah. So mine was more on the group side as opposed to the one-to-one stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was the way. I was there for 4 years, and I the funding was taken away from the student units, so that fell apart. In about 1989, So I came back to the Department of Social Welfare, and I was the senior social worker in Fielding here for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I got restructured, the department restructured three times in 3 years.
Yeah.
They altered the retiring age from 60 to 65.
Yeah.
And I thought enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
So
you'd been looking forward to retirement at 60?
Well, I was knocking 60, yes.
Yes, yeah.
And I was looking forward to retirement at 60, and they changed the goalpost to 65.
Is that the goalpost for the pension?
Yep.
Oh, right, yeah. Hmm. And they did it just very quickly. They didn't give
advance warning. Yes, they did it very quickly. Yeah. Very quickly. My husband and I were both caught up in it. I think he got his at about 63 and something, and I got mine about 64 and something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was when a very short period over a longer period of time. Hmm.
Yeah.
So I had a good talk to Merv Hancock, who was my supervisor, and he said to me, Jackie, he said, you can go into private practice.
Yeah.
And my first major contract was with the Association of Social Workers, where I worked for about 13 years altogether, I think, as a...
So well into your 70s?
Oh, I didn't retire from social work till I was 79, just before my 80th birthday.
Wow. Yeah.
Assessing the competency of social workers to practice, and I covered an area from Manawatu, Horowhenua, Wairarapa, Hawke's Bay, Poverty Bay, Taranaki... Wow.
Yeah.
And up through Rangitike, and I used to travel and meet with other qualified social workers, and we would assess a potential candidate for association, whether they were fit to practice.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why I did that for 13 years.
Okay. What about the gender mix and the age mix of social workers?
Well, the first thing when you say that, I would say it's predominantly female, I think, but there was always men around.
Yeah, and would people?
I don't know what it's like now.
Yeah, would people? Did you find people tending to take it as a career from early on, or something they move into in their 30s or 40s? Or
well, certainly since the undergraduate courses, I think they've come in much younger. Yeah. But I suspect that in the early days they probably moved over from teaching or nursing and things like that. And there's quite a few men in the profession that have been ex-religious people, ex-priests or have left the church or something like that.
Okay.
So quite a few I've come across over time.
Yeah. And you obviously stayed with it for a long time. If you carried on until 79, you found it very satisfying, did you?
Yes, it was. It was. But I eventually moved into education.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked if I would write a course for a certificate in social work for UCOL, which I did with some help of people that know how to write courses. Mm-hmm. And I ran a course in social work at UCOL for a couple of years.
Okay, this is while you were still working? Doing
well, this is when I was in private practice, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And I did that. And I really, really enjoyed adult education because these were second chance people.
Yes.
And okay. I really enjoyed the education part of it. And I also ran courses in basic counselling skills and assertiveness and stuff at night school at UCOL for a while as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very diverse range.
And then when I finally retired, and I did individual supervision here, I had an office at the back.
Yeah.
And then I eventually, after my husband died, I wasn't working full time, I was working part time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I stumbled across English Language Partners. I don't know what it was called then, but ESOL anyway, second language. Yeah. And I had a wonderful time working as a volunteer for them.
Yeah.
And I really, really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's with all the refugee families being resettled.
Refugee families anybody that's come to New Zealand who wants to improve their English. And so I spent a number of years, I'm no English expert,
Yeah.
But I speak the language.
Yeah.
I really have had a wonderful time working with different nationalities.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.